Hey, welcome to Smosh Mouth. I'm Shane.
And I am Amanda, and we have a very, very special guest. You guys have seen him. It's George.
Oh, hello.
Hi, George.
What's going on, George?
Thanks for having me.
Of course.
Duh.
Yeah, in your warm abode.
I know.
And you've been at this table before.
I have.
You have
many
ran
times.
In this seat.
Yep.
Yeah.
The last one that you ran was Smosh versus Zombies.
Mm-hmm.
And a new one,
which
Smosh versus Aliens, which. Yes. Stay tuned for the last episode of that, which will be coming out right after this.
And you and your friend Nick both also, you first came in to help us out with Sword AF.
Yes.
You guys, we wanted some D&D experts to come in and like assist all of us in how to play and how to run it. And so you guys have been here ever since. But Dread has been so much fun.
Oh, good. It's a blast to come play with you guys.
That was so cool doing Zombies. I didn't know what to expect. And it's so trippy to be just sitting at a table with like kind of nothing in front of you except for the Jenga tower, and that's it. Otherwise, you're just telling a story.
Getting thrown in with no character sheet is wild.
Yeah,
I kind of loved that.
Yeah,
I mean, I loved having the character sheet when we did Sword AF, and you guys really like went over what we needed to do and stuff like that. But it was so nice to go in with like a character that we all know, like a 2000s. High school popular girl who I played, and we all got to choose these characters that we all know and love.
Yeah, the session zero of that was very fun.
So good.
Everybody coming up with all their nonsense. Yeah,
so good. So you do a ton of Dungeons and Dragons things. That's like your job,
my
right?
My bread and butter. It is weirdly my job now. Yeah.
You do multiple jobs in this sphere.
I do. So I have a podcast that I produce with my friend Nick called Hero Club.
Yep.
Where we take our D&D sessions, we record them live, and then we mix them down with sound effects and music so they kind of read like audio dramas, but they were recorded playing a game for like live.
So cool.
And then I do a show with Critical Role called The Reslayer's Take.
Badass.
Which is a same kind of thing. We took our Hero Club formula and put it into the Critical Role universe of Exandria, which is completely surreal and amazing. And then some amazing Dread games with you guys, and I do a bunch of miscellaneous stuff in the game space.
So you are, how many D&D games are you playing a week typically?
Five right now.
Whoa!
Five different ones or like?
Different ones.
And you're also editing.
Yeah. And I'm editing.
You're editing and producing.
Full-time editing,
full-time producing.
And I have a dog. I have a little dog.
You have a little dog.
I have a little dog that I've not seen because I'm playing D&D.
I have no time.
And you're playing five D&D games.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, what are those? How many of those are for fun and how many of those are for work?
All for work
Do you ever play D&D for fun anymore?
It is fun.
It's kind of the same as like...
I know, yeah, my hobbies got obliterated.
I pointed this out the other week where I'm like, I realize I rarely play board games at home.
I know.
Yeah.
I'm like, but I play them so much here. And I always have a blast playing them here.
Yeah.
But I realize at a certain point that
Are you going to go home and repeat the task?
I know. That's also the thing.
Yeah.
When you played five D&D games, you're probably not like, hey, guys, let's get one going after work today.
Nope.
You know, but honestly, I have the craving for like a home game really hard. Like,
wow.
It's so hard to get people around a table that often.
Mm-hmm.
I've still yet to play D&D like... outside of this sphere.
Yeah.
And that's the story I feel like I hear all the time is from anyone who plays D&D of like getting the group together
is a classic meme.
So impossible.
Well, scheduling, even scheduling a freaking improv troupe is like saving the world. You're all right, we've got the date. And then someone's like, I'm sick.
And at least improv, it's like, if you're like pursuing acting or something like that, it's like a productive thing to be doing for your career. You can be saying like, hey, I got these shows going on. And then take all of the like any kind of career advancement out of it and just be like, we're going to sit for 4.5 hours and pretend to be fantasy characters.
Uh-huh.
It's a hard like thing to make time for in your day, but... you know.
Yeah, but it's amazing.
The more isolated we become, the more important stuff like that is getting around the table together.
So, yeah, of course.
No, absolutely. Yeah. How did you, because it's such a unique career that I feel like didn't exist until probably like 10 years ago was when D&D became like a career for people.
The Renaissance.
Before that, it was just a thing people did for fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But how did you end up in this?
Yeah, so I was an actor, like a lot of people who move out to L.A. Mm-hmm. I was a musical theater performer in New York.
Wow.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was fun. I like did a very quick off-Broadway thing and had like a stage disaster that scared me off the stage for like the next 10 years.
What was it?
Can you talk about it?
Yeah, I can talk about it briefly without going like, ugh.
Okay.
But it's not a big deal like to talk about it, but to experience it was like 40 car crashes consecutively all in a row.
God.
It was like a 5-minute patter song that I had to go on and sing just really fast. It was technically off Broadway, so I got in my head about it being like a big thing.
Of course.
And I got on stage, the song started, I blanked for 30 seconds.
Yep.
And it is on a track. And it was me and the audience both wishing we were all not there.
Yep.
And then I got back on it and finished the song for like the last, the 4.5 minute patter song that it was, but was like shaking like a leaf.
Uh-huh.
And I was the director, the guy who would like, who was his song and all that. I was like, I'm so sorry. And he was like, yeah, well. And I went, yeah. And then I quit musical theater forever.
George!
I just got spooked out of it. And I was like,
I got to be honest. I've never touched, I don't have the ability, but musical theater always scared the shit out of me because every story I've heard about Broadway, off Broadway, I'm like, yeah, it's just the most terrifying industry
it's begging
that
for
exists.
Disaster.
But also, I love musical theater. I will say the blacking out and like for completely forgetting, it happens.
It happens.
And it's definitely happened to me. I blacked out halfway through a whole sketch.
Yeah.
And my friend had to be like, who's in the sketch with me, staring at me.
Yeah.
It is the worst feeling ever. You literally feel like you're drowning. You're like, I'm drowning. And
this can't possibly be real.
Yeah, but it feels like it lasts a decade. But it happens so much.
I have close to moments like that. I mean, I definitely had a lot of auditions where I just failed.
Oh, yeah.
So hard.
Yeah.
So miserably. Countless times, but it still happens sometimes when we're performing here at Smosh, especially when we do like a live show or something a bigger, where I in my head I call it like becoming conscious too much, where you're suddenly like aware of what you're doing, and then it's like, oh no, I need to go back, I guess. Stop thinking, like
feel the flow.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I relate tremendously, but I definitely. That just is a real thing.
It's so real.
So okay.
So anyway, we got out of there.
So you leave that.
Unrelated, I was moving to Los Angeles already. So I was kind of like, well, I'm not going to pursue musical theater then in LA anyway. It's not like, you know, there's a little bit of musical theater right here that's great, but it's not as prevalent.
It's not really.
No,
thing,
yeah.
But I was already doing voiceover in New York and then moved to Los Angeles. I was a waiter bartender for years and years, but was doing voiceover on the side. The pandemic came along. Mm-hmm. Me and we all got laid off during the COVID thing.
Ditto.
Yeah, it was it was 120 of us or something in the dining room, and they called 30 people out. And I was like, those people are going to get laid off. And then they were like, you guys can go home to 110 of us.
Was it March 15th?
And yeah, that's the date.
That's when I
saved. I was trying to get
out of work.
They were
like, you guys can go home for a couple weeks. And we thought, okay, we'll go home for a couple weeks.
Great, vacation.
2 years.
I never went back.
I
tried to go back and had 3 panic attacks in a row because I just couldn't do it anymore.
Of course.
Yeah.
Because your body, you got out of the flow.
The specials are. What are they? You know, and
I can relate.
Yeah,
you started going to the patter song,
and then I was back on stage.
Sir, I want my chicken tenders.
I said Dijon. Yeah, and it was so crazy hard to get back in. I was just like, I can't do this anymore, so I have to pivot. And I just jumped into doing voiceover full time, freelance, like online.
Hell yeah!
Barely made it work.
Yep.
And then,
but it was a good time to do voiceover.
But it was everybody was kind of doing it.
Uh-huh.
But everybody was sort of doing it without having gotten like all the equipment that I had already accrued, and like I had a lot of knowledge about it already.
Yours sounded a lot better.
I might have sounded a little better, and I just also had been doing it already. A lot of people jumped into it like without taking like lessons and stuff, and that does matter when you're doing like voiceover.
Yep.
So I did that for a little while, and then the Dungeons and Dragons stuff, all of a sudden, it had been like kind of in the works for like, I want to say almost 4 years doing D&D professionally, and then it all sort of clicked. During the pandemic, we ran like this 45-person campaign, and it was like a D&D immersion school for me. And 45 players, eventually it became 7 DMs. But for me, for the first month, it was me running 7 games a week. Every, like, one game a day, every day.
Holy crap.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was the best. It was like pandemic. We got like the relief funds, so I was able to like, you know,
so
pay the bills.
You said you had been doing it professionally for years before that.
Yes. I like DM'd for private groups before.
Got it.
Yeah.
So this wasn't like content. This is like
no, not content.
Just going and running games for people. That's so fascinating.
Yeah.
So
cool. Online, it's just like, and I've been playing with the same two groups for like 2.5 years now. We play like almost weekly.
Cool.
Oh.
Yeah. We've been through like both groups have already been through a full campaign, and we've started new ones.
Wow.
Right now, one of my groups is like they're all level 18, where if you know D&D, it goes up to level 20. So we're as like at the very bounds of what this game can handle.
God. From what I've heard, I think maybe it was you and Nick who told me about it. Like once you get to that point, it's like it's silly town.
Yeah,
yeah.
You're gods. You're just doing insane things. Like you can destroy worlds. And
there's like there's a ninth level spell, which is the highest level spell in D&D, called Wish. And there's a bunch of like effects that it gives you. And then the last paragraph is like, or whatever you want, really.
What?
And like the DM will have to interpret whatever you wish for.
You just can do whatever.
Eventually you just get unlimited genie wishes, kind of.
That's incredible.
Yeah, you're really just having a blast at that point.
And it's a lot of fun if you're playing it with the right people.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And now are you always DMing these games or you
always. Always.
When was the last time you played in a D&D game?
The last time I played in a game as a player character was a Hero Club project a while back that Nick DM'd. I mean, professionally, anyway. I think the last time I actually played was in a game where you DM'd, Shane.
Yes.
Which we can talk about a little bit.
We'll talk about that very soon.
Yes, we will.
I played, like, of course, I got my first opportunity to play for, like, professionally. I went with the most anti-D&D character you can. I was, like, an accountant.
Awesome.
Was a bard.
Wait, I love that.
And though. It was all about just, like, boring people to pay attention to me.
Okay. You were like an energy sucker.
Very much like a Colin Robinson.
Yes, like vampire, energy vampire.
So. How did you get into D&D in the first place?
Nick and I were in college together. We listened to a podcast by Brian Posehn called Nerd Poker. Shout out Nerd Poker.
Okay.
Hell yeah.
But they sounded like they were having so much fun, and Nick and I like played a drinking game to see who was going to DM, and I lost. And I went and bought the $100 worth of books and dice and stuff.
Whoa.
And came back and taught everyone, and it's like been, you know.
That's so sick.
History, yeah.
That's amazing.
So it wasn't like a childhood thing. This was something you picked up later on.
When I was a kid, I was like video game hardline into my veins obsessed.
Yeah.
And my parents put like this, you can only play 2 hours a day on Friday, Saturday, Sunday limit on us. So it was like Friday, I was on the bus like, oh, here we go, playing Mario Kart, playing Madden, whatever game it was we were obsessed with. And it got to the point where, especially when I was younger, I would literally make board game versions of the game that I couldn't play to cope with not being able to play the video game.
So you've been starting this journey of DMing and doing everything.
I was DMing
from
before
the beginning,
I even knew it. Yeah, right.
You know what's funny? That's something I used to do too.
Yeah,
I loved building board games. Now, I never finished them.
Mario Party?
Well, I mean, I'm obsessed with Mario Party, but I was trying to make, and I realized I was trying to make like RPGs.
Yeah.
I didn't have any frame of reference because I never played anything. Well, actually, that's a little bit of a lie. I did play D&D very briefly as a kid because my brother had the Star Wars version.
Oh, yeah.
And so he and I played like a couple sessions where we were like just a couple like weird aliens on different planets doing stuff. And I had such a blast.
That's
but,
so cool.
You know, he was a teenager. He had to go do teenager things. And I was a little kid. So, but I remember just having
You're
a blast.
You're like, stay home.
And I wanted, and then also my favorite board game was HeroQuest, which is like,
oh, great.
Very, very bare bones D&D, I feel like. But I was often like making maps and making like lists of monsters and like what their stats were. And
you were DMing, Shane.
There was no rules to it. There was no actual like logic to any of this. If I actually tried to run this, it would have been a mess. but I was telling my friends, like, I'm building this thing. We're going to have fun
it's
doing this.
Monster
Never here. Happened.
So me playing Clue really set me up to play Dungeons and Dragons too, right?
Honestly, Clue is like logic deduction, and that's a huge element
I was obsessed
D&D.
With Clue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Anyways, pretty cool stuff over here.
Were you a board game family?
Huge board game family. Yeah. Like, we grew up, like,
Monopoly.
Settlers of Catan, Monopoly.
Wow. You grew up Settlers of Catan,
Monopoly,
I
Clue.
Suck at Catan
My
so
mom
hard.
Is an intense card gamer, too. She would have everyone over for Whisk, something. Something.
And wish?
She was really intense
risk?
About that.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't risk.
I feel like
whisk or something.
I feel like I.
There's a million.
There's something where she would have like 20 friends over and we'd play card games.
Whenever I talk to any old person, they always have a new card game I've never heard
of. Yeah. That's Gin Rummy. No, we were a huge board game family. My mom was really intense about TV. We had super restrictions on it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But my little sister would play video games, but it was like still very restricted.
Whist
with a T, not whist.
How do you play whist?
That's what I sang. I wasn't invited.
It was a 20.
You weren't invited?
No, these were her and her friends.
Oh. Okay.
I played backgammon forever.
I've never played backgammon.
Oh, I played my whole trip home.
We had a summer of backgammon. It's great.
We were not much of a board game family. I mean, a little bit when I was really young, but overall, not much. So a lot of these games I've only played here. Mm. Like even games like Settlers of Catan, I have hardly played.
I've never played Risk.
You hate
Settlers of Catan. It's because my brother ruined it for me.
Oh, really?
Whenever he stole
all the wheat or something?
Whenever he plays with me, because it is a game of manipulation. Let's just be clear. It is a game of tricking someone into giving you what you don't want if you haven't set up correctly.
Yeah.
So my brother will just be like, hey, guys, George always wins this game. And I never win the game. But I can't be like, no, I don't. He's like, he always wins.
He's going to win,
guys.
He just
blank faces everybody at the table to making sure nobody trades with me or anything. And he wins every game.
Okay.
He wins every game of chess.
That's just your brother manipulating you.
Yeah, he sets up an embargo against you.
He gaslights me as hard as he possibly can across the table from me and gets the other four people or other two people to absolutely stonewall me on trades. Settlers of Catan. The fact that that's possible makes me not like
the
game.
Yeah, you can't play Settlers of Catan ever again.
He's ruined it for me.
My issue with Catan is whenever I've played it, and I've only played against people who play a lot of it, so I'm screwed. But that's the problem with Catan is you'll play like I'm like 30 minutes into like a 2-hour game and I'm like, well, I've lost.
Yeah.
I can see that I've lost.
Yeah.
I can see that these kingdoms are going to kill me.
Who do I screw?
You're done.
Yeah.
who do I make sure it is true.
It just becomes a spite game.
Yeah.
Like, all right, well,
and
I can
people get pretty upset.
Yeah.
My family definitely gets like holds real grudges. Like
really?
We were also a Pictionary family. Woo!
Pictionary can be hilarious.
Pictionary can be like storming out.
Interpretation rage.
Like you.
I feel like you're most mad at your teammate in Pictionary.
Yeah,
you're like,
a pig?
Yeah. What are you drawing? What is that?
They're like, I had 2 seconds to draw a pig. I freaked out. Anyways.
Love that stuff.
So, you've basically been, you know, DMing since before you were DMing.
Seeds were there, yeah.
And
yeah.
Now, I will say, you're like a certain percentage of people that in COVID you actually kind of flourished a little bit, maybe.
Yeah. It was definitely an opportunity to investigate how far something like this could go.
Right.
Like, it became really important to all of us. Just like the fantasy of it, like, and the escape. Like, that was definitely a thing, but also just like the. All of my friend groups collided, which is something that is completely crazy that I don't
so
really.
Cool.
It was so like my friend Vinny from high school, who I hadn't previously talked to in 10 years, because I just put a call out in social media. People who I hadn't talked to in forever were like, I'll play.
Whoa.
But like he knows like my friends out here who I met within the last, 7 years.
So,
weird. Very bizarre. People were going on vacations together at a certain point when the things went up, and I was like, you with them? That's crazy. Yeah.
Wow.
It was really nuts.
You did that,
George.
I know. They all went to like Norway and things like that. Like, yeah.
And Norway to see the trolls.
Are these all people who didn't play much D&D before? Like, you got them into it?
Mostly. I think a lot of folks had played and definitely played a lot. But there were probably, I would say, like 20 people who it was like their first experience with D&D.
I feel like it's because I'm in LA. I don't know many people who play it like in their free time, but a lot of people do it now. Mm. I feel like the best way to play it is to make it a job.
Yeah,
so that everybody does get together to do it.
It's fun. It's like, very different. It's very different though, because when you play for narrative on camera, your priorities are just different. You know?
Yeah, I definitely felt that when we did it. It added a lot of pressure.
I understand.
To be like, I have to be entertaining.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's tough, because then you're not just trying to tell a story for your own sake. You're kind of like thinking about how this looks.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, so the idea of playing D&D just for fun with friends sounds so exciting, because then you get to just craft it for the people at the table.
Yeah.
And you're not worried about, is the audience going to like this? And you kind of also get to like take the reins off and just be like, well, we can just do whatever.
Let's get wild. Who cares?
Yeah. It can be stressful when, like, you're making a video out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't it interesting to do something that you love and it's now your full-time job?
Yes, it is interesting.
It's such a specific thing, too.
It is so specific. My parents don't understand.
I was going to say. Really? Your parents, A, know what you're doing?
My mom's like, that's great, sweetie. Yeah. And my dad's like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right, sure.
Right,
yeah,
of course.
I think they're very proud, but, like, they don't really understand.
You just don't
know. Because you're one of, like, less than 100 in your type of job. If you think about
probably
it, of people who are like probably like working and able to sustain mm-hmm. mostly off
there's
of that,
of,
right?
There's a lot of online folks who I think probably make a living out of it, who maybe don't do it for like the forward facing camera stuff.
Got it.
But yeah, there's it's a niche but growing world.
Definitely. Know?
I mean, it was always a thing I knew about, but I feel like before these past 10 years, it was more of just kind of like a thing you'd hear offhand jokes about. Like, oh, yeah. Dungeons & Dragons. D&D. Like, the nerds who get together in their basement to play Dungeons & Dragons. Mm-hmm. But now it's become like the cool thing.
It's had its little renaissance. Stranger Things made it kind of cool.
I know.
I was playing way before Stranger Things. But Stranger Things made it like sort of mainstream, talk aboutable, and then Critical Role.
And Critical Role, they're two Vox.
Vox Machina and The Mighty Nein are their animated shows. Uh-huh. Mighty Nein hasn't come out yet, I don't think, but no. Vox Machina is like into its in second, and I think they renewed, like they're really going.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And yeah, they exploded. They opened the door for a lot of other people, like Dimension 20 is something that cropped up from like the Dropout folks.
I feel like internet DMs are these kind of like, they're very cherished people, you know? But I also feel like, you know.
I don't know nothing about that. Yeah, yeah.
I feel like Brendan Lee Mulligan and Matt Mercer are people that everyone's just like, oh, they're just.
They're
like,
gods,
wow, wonderful.
George.
You people like Matt, Brennan, you've got Abria Iyengar, Jasmine Bular, like all of these incredible folks who have like made their name DMing, and like they go to conventions and DM, they do live shows, they go to England and DM in a castle, and all some of those people
I feel like there's a certain personality trait that I feel like I see in all of them, and I see it with you too, which is I think in order to do this you have to be such an observant. You have to be a great listener, and you have to be such a like open-minded person. You know what's fascinating? Doing this with you, and like when you were teaching us all this stuff, like there's just no wrong answers.
Yeah,
and it's so fascinating because you'll try to throw something at you, and like you're just like, oh yeah, for sure.
My
favorite moment in Dread was when Spencer when like I pop up as my second character as Reuben because my previous character had died.
Yep,
I pop up and Spencer like. Typical Spencer was like, yeah, and I blast with a flamethrower. And you're like, okay, yeah.
Okay.
All right, let's move
forward.
Like,
what?
I love that moment. I also feel like for me, someone who does comedy, like I feel like you also get you're like so funny. You like get it. You know what I'm saying?
Truly.
We're playing and we're playing like 2000s, and I'll say something that feels like something you know only your close friends would get, and you pick it up immediately and you bring it right back to me.
That's a lot of credit to you guys though, because you do set up these characters so clear that it's very easy.
I just think it's like
no way, George. You are so you're just so funny and so easy to play with, and I feel like. That's such a gift to have as a DM.
Yeah.
And to also be like, okay, you made this decision. Let's go for it. Like Spencer doing the flame throwing. And it's like, okay.
It's such a specific skill. And I mean, it's you don't realize until you try it. I mean, you know, Damien, it was his first time doing it. And I remember him talking about like, okay, this is going to be a lot and stuff. And I feel like you saw him progress throughout the two seasons. And then I did, and we can talk about it here in a second. I did do a one shot. I ran with you, Nick, and Alex Tron.
Mm.
And doing that, I was like, this is crazy.
It was hard.
This is really hard.
Yeah.
Like, this is
Shane, very good DM, everybody. Very, very good.
In the one session I did. But it was a lot of fun. But I also think I have a lot of respect for people who do it and really get down into the weeds of like all the rules and stuff. And I've heard people talk about the different levels of playing D&D of like... Playing if you play it really by the book with all the math and stuff. I've heard people talk about like, oh, it takes like certain moves to get your armor on.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like,
10 minutes to put on heavy armor, about a minute to put on medium.
That's
I might yeah, I think that that's right, right? It might be 5 minutes to put on medium and 1 minute to put on light, but I can't remember. I feel like light armor would be a minute.
See, his brain is filled people with love
so much useless information.
It's not useless. You're making a career out of it.
It is very much about to be useless because they're about to release a new edition that changes rules and I'm gonna have to disappear.
So do people really have to stick with when they release a new thing? It's like, we gotta do this.
No, because you could easily just say this is a D&D 5th edition campaign and you know you're going to be playing with that rule set.
And who is releasing these new rules? Is it like two dudes
it's
in an office?
Of the Coast.
That's
the company.
Wizards
Live in the Coast. Wizards of the Coast, they put out new editions to keep the game fresh. It's a good thing and a tough thing. Tough thing because, you know, sometimes it can come across like they're just sort of like releasing new content to try to like get people to buy more stuff. But then sometimes you look at those new rule sets and you're like, but that is like an improvement on the rule set. And I do kind of want to like incorporate that into the game. I think, and I also do think like, despite it being a little bit like they're trying to like reinvigorate like their actual machine, I do think it is good to keep the game relevant by keeping discussions alive about like what are better rules.
Yeah,
for sure. So I do think it's also like a smart play to do that. And I do, I mean, I've looked at a little bit of like what the new 5.5 or whatever it is going to be. And I do like a lot of the stuff they've put in. I'll probably move on to the next edition.
Is it just new rules or do they add like new monsters and new things?
They'll reinterpret monsters sometimes. They'll add new ones. They'll mostly, the way this one works is it's like 5.5. They haven't changed the core rule set, but they've changed a lot of like how interactions work and some of the fundamental things that make a class feel the way it feels, they've changed.
I saw someone talking once about in one of the previous editions of D&D that every monster had like a morale like thing.
Oh, yeah.
Where basically when you're fighting something, you roll this thing and it's like, it determines whether it's like scared. It decides it's going to try to run away from this fight or not.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's cool and makes a lot of sense.
Oh, a lot of fun.
Because nowadays you fight anything, it's like, yeah, it'll fight you to the death.
But it doesn't have to because like if I as the DM, I'm like, that thing is a monster and it doesn't have like an intent to be here. At half hit points, it's going to run. You know what I mean? Like, so I'll know that in my head as like I'm going to let this thing bolt as soon as it realizes it's not going to eat right now.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
It's sort of, the rules are as complicated as you want them to be, but also they can be as loose as you want them to be. That's sort of why I feel comfortable like breaking the rules because I know the rules backwards. I can be like, well, I can institute a penalty for a failure if you're trying to bend the rules in this way. And all of a sudden we're wagering and all of a sudden everybody leans in at the table of like, oh, what's going to happen? It could be bad. You know?
Yeah.
So it's like,
do you even have much fun playing or is DMing really actually
I've talked about this
joy?
Before. I love DMing. I don't have as much fun playing as when I do DMing.
Is that because you're watching the DM and going, just kidding.
Man, you're really, you're really pooping the bed, my man. No, not at all. I really love the DM part of it is actually the fun part for me. It's the all the time in between where all the other players are doing their thing. My brain can't stop because I'm DM trained to be listening to everything. And I'm like, don't talk.
You can't like rest. You can't like just be in rest. But then again, you've DM'd something when we did a practice round and you really let us go for a while.
Yeah.
And you like let it happen.
But I'm listening and
You're listening to everything.
And as soon as I feel like it's time to like grab the reins again and like bring in the next stimuli to the narrative or whatever, I can.
Yeah.
And it's not, you know, so there is a permissiveness to being a DM that makes me feel less stressed.
What makes doing it for content so hard though is you kind of have to keep it moving. And that's where I'm like, damn, to play it on your own time, then you get to really be like, wait, hold on, let's settle for a second and like talk about this and stuff.
They're longer.
But when you're doing it on camera, it's like, okay, I have to keep it going to a certain degree.
I will say, like, folks like Critical Role, they really breathe and take their time and they do those big, long sessions, and people love that, you know?
Right.
And you have then folks like Dimension 20 who edit quite a bit harder
than
Critical Role. They really like
it. They have a different pace. Mm-hmm.
But that's because those are all, like, comedy folks who came from an improv background and a sketch background.
That are like, I'm tagging you out.
Yeah, I'm tagging.
Next
here we
scene.
Go. Beats, beats, rhythms, rhythms. And the CR people are, like, acting voiceover artists, and they are here to act, and also they're all buds. They just hang.
They're just hanging out.
It's crazy how different the different ones are. We have coworkers here who are just such huge fans of some of them. Like,
yeah,
the people who are like diehards for Critical Role are diehards for it. Like, they like, I think Andre, I don't think he'll mind me saying this, but he's just like, I hardly watch movies or TV because I watch Critical Role.
And, well, yeah, it's like great storytelling.
That's what he's into.
And you don't know what's going to happen. In a world where so many things are being bought up by these huge corporations and everything's starting to kind of look the same.
Exactly.
How refreshing
to
is
be
it?
Whatever.
It's from someone's mind, especially I love watching them because they have such great voices.
Oh, yeah.
That they give a voice and you already know the backstory of the voice without them telling you about it. They already have clicked in. You're like, oh, I know this person.
Yeah.
And then you don't even need to see it. I mean, it's really cool that they make them, you know, some of their campaigns animated, mm-hmm. but it's like, you don't even need to see it. You're really listening. Whereas D20 is so fun as well, but it's so different because it's like a long form improv.
Yeah.
With Dungeons and Dragons, and it's like, It's also feeds my like appetite because it's like, oh, jump.
They're both, I think, like really amazing examples of two slightly different styles of play, but like really mm-hmm. like they still share the heart of like D&D is, you know, it's like they love it.
Yeah.
You can tell like Brendan and Matt when they go in to play a game, like heading those games, they are inspired every time they get around the table, which is really like a gift.
Yeah.
It's such a fun thing. I feel like we can get into people don't know this. Our fans don't know this because I haven't talked about this.
The fans don't know. This is secret. Exclusive.
Months ago, this was last year, while in between the first season of Sword AF and the second season, I pitched to Spencer and Alex. I was like, hey, what if I did a one-shot campaign? What if I, because it sounds really fun. I'm really enjoying D&D. Like, I think I'd have a lot of fun DMing because I love storytelling. And I was like, what if we just do this one-shot? And we're like, okay, we talked about doing it. I will say, just off the bat, it didn't end up happening for scheduling reasons. We definitely overbooked ourselves here at Smosh for a while.
Yes, we did.
And so a lot of things couldn't happen, and we also were just exhausted. And we're like, no, we don't.
Understandable.
But I actually am so grateful for this experience that I planned a whole campaign, and I actually ran it with you, Nick and Alex Tron. And basically, I got to experience all of it. So I bought all the stuff. I bought the books and everything. I was reading through them because it brought back like memories of when I was a kid, like what I was into of trying to create these things.
Nothing better.
And I love looking at stat sheets. Like, I love that stuff. That's so fun. And so I'm looking through the rules. I'm looking through the monsters, and I have this plan. And basically, what Spencer and Alex kind of pitched that I liked to was, in the first season of Sword AF, we're playing as these like loser heroes. We're the underdogs.
Yep.
And in one of the first episodes, we come across a team of like cool mercenaries.
I remember.
Like the stereotypical heroes.
Like bro
mercenaries.
They're
the jocks. Yeah. We're the nerds. They're the jocks. And so, but you kind of only see them a couple times.
Yeah.
And they're just kind of like the douchebags who make fun of us. They're like, we just killed a Kraken. What are you guys up to?
And we're like, we're heading to bake pie. Hello?
Yeah. We're up to nothing. And so we wanted this one-shot campaign to be about them, the stereotypical heroes.
Yes.
And so I was planning this whole story, and what I decided is they're all at a tavern, and they've just kicked some ass. They're hanging out there, and then suddenly this demon guy shows up. But he's like kind of cool looking. He's like a Mr. Rogers esque type of guy. Silver fox guy.
Twilight.
Very much like he's got a pipe. He's got silvery hair. You know, he's wearing like a cardigan.
He's DMing right now.
I'm like, where's my stat sheet? I don't feel ready.
He shows up to them and, you know, time freezes around them. Like he's this very powerful demon. And he's like, hey, you guys are heroes. You're the some of the most powerful heroes in the world. And my son, who's like 13, is a huge fan of heroes. It's his birthday. And for his birthday, all he wanted was to hang out with some heroes. So if you want to come with me to the underworld and hang out with my son for the day.
I love the underworld.
And just make his birthday the best birthday.
Yeah.
I will grant you whatever you want.
Oh, your son is not well.
And he's like, but he does want him. He's like, my son is a douchebag. Like, let me be clear. My son
he's
is
in
a
the underworld.
He's a piece of shit. He is the son of the devil. So just, you know, whatever.
You brought in Greek mythology. I love
he's not
it.
The yeah, actual I know, devil. Right. I named this guy. His name was Merlot, just for fun.
Oh, God. The wine that, like,
and then,
didn't do
and
well.
Then I called the... I called his
sideways ruin.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
I had a lot of fun with the puns, like the neighborhood is the bad manners, because it's all like, imagine like a gated community, but for like demons.
Come on, so, the puns,
it,
man.
Yeah, it was so many
DMing.
Puns.
DMing is 80% puns.
So
I love it.
So they go and they're at this mansion, right? And the mansion is also down the street is where the Merlot has a casino and a stand-up club and all this stuff, that a nightclub that he runs for all the demons. So the idea was they'd be left there with the son, and the son then very quickly is like, I want to kill my dad and overthrow him and become the leader of the underworld.
Wait, I love this.
So it's kind of a choice of like they need to help because it was like, hey, they were told to do whatever for the son. So the campaign is, how do we help the son overthrow his dad?
Succession in the underworld.
Literally. So that was my plan. I planned out the map. I planned out like, here's every room in this mansion. Here's the casino, here's the bar and the stand-up club, here's all the monsters that are in every single place, and I was just having fun creating this world. So I was like, okay, I got this, I know how this will go, I know how it'll end.
That's good.
And
Jordan's like, good luck with that.
I know how it should end. So, and I'm also, my big fear was, I'm like, is this going to be too hard? Because I threw in a ton of crazy monsters, but I'm like, but they all live here. You're in the underworld, so these monsters aren't going to just come out and attack you.
Yeah.
But I put in like, I looked through the book and I was like, I was picking the biggest,
the
toughest
big
monsters.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
And George, Nick, and Alex are playing. What kind of character? What were you?
I was playing like a wizard.
Yes, you were a wizard. You were like this
wizards
old wizard.
Wizards on the coast?
You were this old wizard. George, or Nick played as a paladin who was the most righteous paladin of all time.
God.
And he starts off.
I'm a servant of the light.
And I'm like, okay. I told you guys, I was like, I want you guys to try to mess this up as much as possible. I was like, throw everything at me so that I'm prepared for anything. So they knew that this story takes place in the underworld. I think I had briefed you guys on that. So the first thing out of Nick's mouth when we start this campaign is, and I will strike any undead being I see. Like, I refuse to not attack them.
Stop.
And smite them. I was like, great. So this all takes place in the underworld.
You're
so
like, thanks.
It's going to be
basically,
that.
Basically, you're going to attack everything you see. And then Alex was a rogue. And so they start off in the tavern. I'm like, yeah, you see this like this lady by the bar. She's got like a nice like necklace on, whatever. And Alex is just like, I'm gonna steal it. And I'm like,
Alex,
okay, like we're just doing
we're
this.
Going.
You guys
understood.
Immediately got into
I
a
love
fight
it.
Right there at the bar and like beat up a guy. But then I get you guys to the underworld. And just the way you're acting towards everything was just insane. I had to keep being like, okay, change of plans. And
we had a mission to mess it up, I will say.
So we had a mission.
You did, and
now,
that was amazing.
I had plans for how all this, I had laid all these things, because basically what I hoped that they would infer and figure out is the goal is to make the son believe in himself.
Mm-hmm.
If he believes in himself, he can become whatever he wants, because mm-hmm. he's a super demon. Now, I left like motivational books all over the place. I left like all sorts
they didn't
of
pick
things
it up once.
That infer, they did not give a shit about any of it. But they come to they go to the son's room, and he is trying to be a Twitch streamer, is my whole thing.
Oh,
he was streaming on Lich.
God.
And how do you not glom onto that as a player immediately?
So I'm like, he's a Twitch streamer.
That's the whole thing.
He's a Twitch streamer. And I was like, but that was kind of like, I had not put much thought into that other than, yeah, he's just playing Twitch. That's when you find him. And you guys immediately are like, let's take the Twitch setup with us. Let's record everything we do and make him the most famous Twitch streamer. And I was like, you got it. Like, that's what we're doing now. And that became the whole focus of this campaign, this practice session that we did. And I had not prepared for any of that. So the entire time, you guys would do anything. And they'd be like, all right, let's turn to the camera and strike a pose.
Let's start a hype train.
I was like, roll to do that. And I don't know the rules. So you guys would roll. You'd be like, we rolled a 13. I'm like, sure. And it goes insane. It gets to a point where I'm like, they roll up to the casino and a valet opens the door for him. I'm like, it's like a skeleton valet opens the door. And Nick is just like, and I strike him immediately.
Smite him.
And so they just, instead of I had planned in this casino. I had cards. I had dice with me that they could go into this casino and play any casino game they wanted, and I would have been prepared to do all of that.
Been fun.
They could have gone to the stand-up club. They could have gone. I had all these things.
Been fun.
But no, they burst into this casino, attacking everything immediately.
Dude, release the tapes.
You don't have it.
Fans don't have it.
It was a practice session.
Fans are going to want you to do a one shot.
Would you ever do another one shot?
If I did a one shot, I would want to do something different. Because basically, this ties in so much to Sword AF. What happens is they caused so much of a ruckus that I had to basically fast track it to the final fight. And Merlot shows up and he's like, "What the hell are you doing?" And he then suddenly summons they're in a gigantic coliseum in like a gladiator game situation.
Oh.
And then Merlot lets them know like every year his son asks to hang out with heroes because every year his son tries to overthrow him. And every year he kills these heroes that come here. He's like, you guys are dead. He's like, and there's all these demons everywhere. I've got like Cthulhu like looking over and stuff. Cool. And I'm like, oh, I've got all these demons here, but I know what you guys are afraid of. You're these heroes, but you know that you're just the side characters in this world, that the main heroes are out there and you're afraid of facing the fact that you're just side characters and you are expendable. And then he summons the like demon versions of all the characters in Sword AF. So like a demon version of Fernie and Dolores and all these things. And it ends with them fighting the sort of heroes.
Did Dolores do any like backflips or anything?
She does some crazy
aerial
stuff.
Routines.
She did some stuff. Well, this is also where I learned that you guys are professional D&D players. Because I was like, this is going to be really hard. I'm like, if we had been playing this and we faced these monsters that I had created, I think we would have gotten our asses kicked.
Yeah, probably.
They didn't get hit once. Yeah. Nick was like, okay, so I'm going to put up this shield. And okay, now what kind of creature is this? I was like, it's like an undead spirit thing. And he's like, okay, good. So I get plus this.
I get an extra D8 because they're fiend undead on a smite.
Dude, of course.
They're saying so much stuff. I know they're not lying to me. I'm like, yeah, I know that's true. Yep, that's probably true too. I mean, just crushing this shit.
I love it.
Damn. Okay. But they defeat him, and then at the end, the son is there, and he's like, now you guys are my servants here in hell forever.
What? So
basically, I set up, right. I was like, there's no win. Like, you're going to lose no matter what. You're in the underworld.
Such
you're
a great DM move, though, because
it was funny.
You got to the place you wanted to get to in a really fun, unexpected way. That's like the DM thing, man.
Yeah,
is that
your hope, usually, to get to the place
That I roughly plan. Yeah, I think so. You're like, right? Because when we were moving through, you saw all the things we were passing, right? But then you were like, you still had like these little leapfrog stones where you were like, well, they're going to get here, the casino.
Exactly.
They're going to get here. It doesn't really matter how they get there as long as they get there, right?
I had thought about, I'm like, what if they try to just go off the grid? I'm like, okay, and I will just go off the grid.
And if they went off the grid, would you try to bring them back to the place
I probably, my failsafe was that I'm like, no matter what they do, they're going to piss off the devil.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're going to cause so much chaos. I knew they were going to cause so much chaos that no matter what, they're going to piss him off and they're going
to
end
gonna
up
go
there.
They're going to go to the Colosseum.
They're going to go there because they're going to piss him off.
So that
was my failsafe.
That's
and it worked.
I love that.
Perfect failsafe.
But it was funny because I had you planned so much and then it doesn't happen. And I remember you told me a thing once about how you had like planned all these artifacts and things for your players to use, and they were just like, "Yeah, we're gonna burn this place down."
Nick loves this story. Nick's like, "Because I was still a new DM, and I had punished them so hard through this campaign of just like I'd killed like three of them. They had old new characters. They were coming in as like we were like traveling through hell, and I was like, all right." Time to pump the brakes. I got to give these guys like a power bump. We're going to give them some stuff to handle the stuff a little better. I had betrayed them so many times as their DM that they were like, all these magic rings, all bad. Burn this house to the ground. And they burned the whole thing to the ground. And I was like, 12 insanely powerful magic rings that I just went.
Oh.
Threw it away. And we kept going. And I was just like, all right, they don't want it.
Do you plan out your whole campaign with like, Route A, like different choose your own adventure, like multiple ways to get there?
That's a great question. It sort of depends. If I'm DMing like a 10-session campaign for Hero Club, mm-hmm. I usually have like a pretty good idea of where I want, like, because I usually plan things in like 3-episode arcs.
Got it.
Like my favorite thing to do.
Yeah.
So I'll know like the general idea for those last couple arcs, but I'll wait till I've seen the first two to really populate them with any details, because one of the craziest things I've ever experienced in a game was we're playing like an Indiana Jones kind of campaign, sort of time period. 1910s, a little prior.
Fun.
and it was like all magical artifacts and stuff called City of Mirrors. And on the hunt for the City of Mirrors, one of our NPC guests just like improvised a like monkey idol that they gave one of the players. And I was like, oh, well, that's a cursed item. I don't know what that's going to be. But I just like quickly wrote some lore for whatever this thing was. And then it was speaking to them in their dreams and trying to like convince whoever had touched the idol. It was like, hey, he's going to kill you in your sleep for me.
What?
You have to stop him from killing you because he'll get all my power and you won't get any of my power. And he would appear to them as like heightened versions of themselves. So to the British explorer, it was like, my good man, hello. And then to the pilot guy, he was like, hey, we're flying. I'm the monkey idol from your dreams.
So funny.
Stop.
But they both rolled natural ones to resist the monkey's pull in the same episode, back to back. And all of a sudden, I'm like, well, I need an extra episode to resolve this. So
We wrote
a mushroom trip episode where they had to resolve their differences with the monkey idol and themselves. And it was like, you know, so I didn't plan. And like, that was like a huge gift that I hadn't planned too much.
Right. It's good that you didn't plan too much.
Yeah.
But you had the ending kind of in your mind.
I knew we were going to end up like in the City of Mirrors.
Okay.
Okay.
And I knew roughly what the City of Mirrors was because we were doing a lot of like Norse and Judeo-Christian blending of like mythology.
Uh-huh.
Cool. So I knew like what it was, but I didn't know how we were going to get there. I didn't know if we were going to get there and blow the place up or if we were going to try to take the place's power. Kind of both ended up being the case. But yeah, one of the things I love in Sword AF in the second season is when you guys go to the Fae Court for the first time and like you're all trying your different ploys.
Yeah.
And like that whole, like you guys felt that like the freedom opened up and you guys like expressed your characters in like this really true way, especially like you and Chance with like your aerial routine in the middle of the thing.
Just
it's super
like,
fun.
Yeah.
Especially when you get like your weaponry in that final dungeon where you're like, you got like a machine gun.
Yeah.
Like,
you know it well because you edited.
I did.
Yeah, you edited all of Sword AF too.
I was one of the editors for Sword AF too. Yeah. It was a blast.
It was crazy. Really, I mean, the tough thing with Sword AF was doing it all in 1 week. You know, because with our schedule,
I feel you.
I think the problem is with our schedule.
We've done that too. It's a tough schedule.
And we were also learning, like I was learning it and, you know, fitting it in while also filming all the other things we do.
Oh,
right.
Yeah, that's a lot.
And so
when you add other stuff to it, that's where it gets really
Me. I think that was ultimately why we like are like, we're like, okay, after this season, we're taking
a break.
We need, and Dread is so much more easy because we can film it in a day. And
yeah.
It's like not as much prep for it.
There's so many TTRPGs out there. D&D is not the only one. Dread's not the only one. You know, there's lots.
I would love to do a one shot. You know, I think that seems manageable. I would want to come up with a new story. But
D&D is great because it's like common. It's like when you're talking like languages in D&D, it's like, you know, it's the one that most people have some familiarity with when they know TTRPGs. And then you can kind of branch out from there to other interesting ones too.
Yeah.
You mentioning that your friends rolled natural ones brings me to something I wanted to ask,
which is,
do you believe in luck? Like the concept of luck,
because
it's such an integral part
of
RPGs, of video games, of everything. You believe in it.
Yeah, 1,000%. How could you not believe in luck?
Yeah.
It's funny.
I've seen too much consistent bad luck and too much consistent good luck to not believe.
So I'm a skeptic in general, but when it comes to luck, I, on an instinctual subconscious level, am such a like believer.
Yeah.
Because of my bad luck in certain spheres.
He has really bad luck rolling.
This is a perfect segue. So hopefully we're going to turn something around right now.
I love this.
So I have a little surprise.
Oh.
In my cute little bag.
Oh god.
We're just going to we're going to refresh your luck with some fresh dice sets for you guys. I tried to pick stuff that kind of perfectly emulated
this is for us?
For you guys.
You got
I got you little dice gifts.
Are you serious?
We're going to get the bad luck out of here. So that's Dolores as I could get. And then I couldn't decide which one for Fernie, so you can mix and match them.
Oh,
because you've got the nature and
so
you got
cute.
The fire.
Thank you.
So feel free to split them around and mix them up.
That's so cute.
These are awesome. And they're like rubber.
Yeah.
So the sound people won't be mad at me.
That's awesome.
George.
Oh, and then this won't mess up the table.
Won't mess up the table. Won't.
Hey,
I was
going to
like
so
metal
sweet.
Dice and I was like, they will destroy their table in three rolls. So
dude.
Spencer now is going to be like, why didn't we use rubber dice before?
Yeah. George, or this is get, like, so sweet.
Yeah, they're fun to just like squish around.
I rolled the six and I got a one.
No way.
Honey, okay. That's
well,
very
then
you.
Put that D6 away and you get the green D6.
Okay, okay. Yeah.
Dude.
I've heard about people talk about dice jails.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Dice dunce cap.
George, this is so fucking
this
awesome.
This is really
hell yeah.
Sick. Thank you.
Take them into your next
Ten.
Journeys. Look at that. Okay. That's
10.
Okay.
I have pretty good rolls. I have
I think
pretty
you
good
have
luck.
Good roll
the
luck.
D20s are the arbiters of if the set's going to be lucky.
Yeah, so where my luck was really bad was before we did D&D, we did a series called Bored AF Legacy, where we played Betrayal Legacy.
Oh, awesome.
And it was a
yes.
lot of fun.
I've seen that
and the dice,
you guys.
The That's dice awesome. In that game are, they are 0 to 2.
Mm-hmm.
And you have several dice and you're rolling them. And throughout the entire series, I
yeah.
was rolling so horribly. People actually don't even understand how horribly I rolled.
It was bad.
Because there were some games where I was rolling so badly that they would be like, and sorry if this breaks some of the fun. This we don't do this often, but they would be like, okay, Shane, can you re-roll?
We'll you got to re-roll.
And I would re-roll like 3 or 4 times.
It was really embarrassing.
Because it was so like funny. It was like otherwise it was like, oh, your character just doesn't
over.
Do anything.
Or doesn't yeah. like talk.
Yeah, doesn't actually get to exist. So let's re-roll for entertainment
hey man,
purposes.
You're here, so you should
yeah,
talk.
but like it was so horrendous at a certain point. Like my character would be so juiced up and should be so strong that he's taking people out, and I would roll 6
Chill.
Dice and get like a 2. And it's like, I don't know how this is happening, but specifically with dice and cards, I
okay.
have really bad luck.
Oh, that's
I think
a
I
lot
have,
of the things that determine
but I,
well,
I,
yeah.
think I, have, I think I have general good luck.
Okay.
Overall. Like
for
like,
life?
Like in life, like whenever I'm at an airport, I'm like, I know things are going to work out today.
Wow,
like,
I wish
like,
I was you.
I
wow, mean,
like,
that's awesome.
I would I'm trade like, dice luck for that.
Exactly. No, I it's over. Why I complain about it when I'm at the table, but I'm not sitting around going, oh, I'm the most unlucky person. I'm very lucky in so many spheres that what I say to myself is, you know what, this is the area where I have bad luck because I have good luck
oh my God,
everywhere else. Like everything
wow.
tends to work out. Inconveniences always seem to kind of like subside for me mm-hmm. in most ways, but dice, I have bad luck.
You have bad luck. I feel like I have pretty good luck.
Decent.
I have pretty good luck with darts,
yeah.
with dice.
Well, darts nice. Is skill.
Oh, yeah, that's I have skill.
Dice is truly, truly.
Yeah.
See, I just got a compliment out
I
of that.
It.
That's awesome. So, how do we break Shane's bad luck?
All right, should I roll this d20 and see what I get?
Yeah. I think we definitely.
These
need
dice are so cool.
Aren't they fun?
George, thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
If I roll a nat one, guys, what does it mean?
Well, right, we've talked about
here
it.
Here I go.
They're hard to read. That is an 18, Shane.
Yo!
Yo! Wait, I hope you didn't transfer your bad luck to me.
You know, now you have it.
That's a 5.
That's my favorite number.
Okay.
My favorite
okay.
number.
Right. Okay.
It's
that
my favorite
counts,
number.
That actually counts as 20.
Yeah.
That's actually 20.
My favorite number. So we're good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. it's so funny,
that's
man. Like, I know it's not the case. Because I would roll plenty of good times, but I would
well,
only think about the bad times.
I don't know, man. I've seen some people, especially like in our Reslayer's Take game, we have one of our players who literally seems like she can't roll above a 5.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so frustrating when you're playing,
oh,
too.
Oh, I feel, yeah. I can see the frustration, but it does lead to some very funny stuff, so it's always like worth it. I'm always excited when she rolls terribly
yeah.
in a very, you know, dire situation, but like as a player, you're like, well, I am incapacitated for the 9th time.
Yep.
You know, it can be tough.
And then when you play Dread, you don't have to roll at all. You just have to pull Jenga.
And yet,
it really is.
And
your,
you know what?
And yet
I was the one who died twice.
Yeah, and yet it didn't
that.
Really work out for you, Shane.
Yeah, how was your luck in versus aliens?
Well, since the second episode is coming out after this, I won't give away too much.
Mm-hmm.
But I play a we're all at a sleepover. We're all middle
yep.
schoolers. I play the kid who has divorced parents.
Ooh,
and I'm a little bit of an arsonist.
As they are.
Yeah, you know.
A little bit of an arsonist.
I kind of hide things from
I
my
dabble.
Mom. Yeah. My hair is always slightly a little bit greasy and in one eye. So
what
you can't
year does this
see.
Take place?
2002.
I love how that's the era that we picked. We're like, yeah, this all happened then.
I think there's a world where it's all happening at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, slightly
there's
different.
Always a chance.
Yeah, there's always a chance.
I feel like
about bad luck.
Yeah.
Zombies and aliens all at once.
Exactly. I feel like Smosh versus aliens, I feel like most of us had, we're I don't know if we had good luck.
I will say this.
Yeah.
Because we've seen episode one, right?
We've seen episode one. We haven't seen
episode one is out.
We haven't seen episode two, which is the finale.
We've seen what happens to one of our characters.
Yeah.
And that was certainly not luck. It was certainly because of one of the craziest and funniest decisions of a poll in the world, where somebody went down to here and took one of the bottom.
Was that? Was that me?
I think it was Chance.
I think it was Chance.
Where he took one of the bottom, but not the center one out.
Nope.
And it was like
took
all
one of the sides.
Took one of the side bottom like ones psycho. Out. And it was all of a sudden the tower's just like, woo, the whole time.
That's a Chance move right there.
That's
it was
a
very
move.
Fun. I looked
crazy.
At it and I was like, yes. You know, that's so fun. The fire is so great.
Was it in Zombies? I'm trying to think if I actually, I tried to do that. I tried to do that where I tried to take a middle one.
You did. You
and
did.
And I thought that I could split the tower and it could perfectly land.
That was never going to work out.
It was the most chosen thing that I thought I could pull off.
It was never going to work out.
Oh, yeah. It super didn't work. But it was very, I would love to see you try it one more time.
You know? Absolutely. I think I tried later and I semi-successful.
It hit and then hit.
I hope that after this last episode of Smosh versus Aliens, I'm hoping
the last episode is crazy.
It's insane.
It's one of the most pop-off games of dread I have ever played.
Shane,
and
it would be.
I'm excited to see it.
Yeah, I. Can't
I haven't
wait.
Watched any of it because as of recording this, they're not out yet.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I don't know what's in store. I'm very excited to watch it though because Dread was so fun, and if you haven't watched it, it's one of my favorite things
must.
That we've done. But I'm so
blast.
Excited to get to watch one. Without having seen it or been there, you know, it's so exciting.
Yeah.
It's a fun one, right?
It's a fun one because I love the theme. Everyone knows a sleepover, and all of us really know sleepovers, and we all had our own different characters, but we knew each other. And Angela is the cousin from like, her name's Tampa, but
Tampa.
She's not from Tampa, and she has bad sleep apnea.
A sleep machine.
And she's got a sleep apnea machine. And it just, what I love so much about Dread is the you ridiculous know, comedy that everybody knows.
You know what sets us apart, I feel like, from so... Because I feel like so many people, when they play D&D, it's their opportunity to be, like...
The most hot,
like,
druid.
Powerful character they never get to be.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, us here at Smosh, it's like, all right, well, not Chance.
Chance is like,
I'm hot.
I'm hot. He was a hot
but
middle...
The rest of us are like, oh, I'm this stupid little kid with asthma.
Oh,
like,
gross. Just so gross.
I'm a CPAP machine, and I look gross, and and my hair's greasy.
Yeah, he
it's
made
like,
himself...
What's going on? Why are we doing this?
Heavy
he made himself really cool. He was like a really cool basketball but soccer player.
Yes. Honestly, Chance became like the drama of the episode. Where
Chance was the drama. Yeah,
it was like his family, Chance was playing like a little a middle school girl whose like brothers weren't really paying attention to her.
Yeah,
and the father was more interested in the boys, and the
it was a real story.
To be like, yeah,
wow.
It was like a kind of a little bit real.
Wow.
And then me thinking like that's setting up Chance to probably be maybe the protagonist of this. Ooh. And then as we've seen.
Nope.
Nope.
Not at all.
Maybe not.
I am not sure who really was the protagonist.
Well, it feels when I can't say anymore, but the ending of this certainly sets up something sinister.
Yeah,
there's some stuff set up based on the outcome that you'll love it.
I'm really excited. I'm really excited the gifts that George gave me as a character too. Like I got to see some stuff before I got to the friend's house. Like,
oh yeah,
you just
fun.
Kept giving us gifts, and also.
That's what DMing, like in an improv,
gifts.
Like what gifts is like to set somebody up for something. It's all it DMing is.
It's just
support moves and gifts.
Yeah, and also a lot of other things that are really complicated, like thinking about everything all at once and creating a story, and when we mess it up, creating another story.
Thanks, guys. but again,
I'm gonna shower George with compliments and watch him squirm a little bit.
You have no idea how torturous it is.
I know.
But it really, like one of the things I always talk about when I'm talking about like
anybody saying like, oh, that was so fun. It really is half or 75%, however, you know, for it was five of us around the table, so it was 80% of us. It's 80% you guys.
Yeah.
And it's 20% me. And just because I am the wall off which things rebound doesn't mean that I'm like working harder than you guys at the table. You know what I mean? And that's the truth for all of those Dimension 20, Critical Role, all of those other amazing shows.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's you, it's you, it's like getting a good, sorry, I'm playing too much.
I am so addicted to
I'm playing
now.
Too much. This feels like a fidget spinner too.
They're good fidgets.
Like,
they are.
I also feel
you can kind of squish them.
Yeah, you can squish them
a little bit and they come back. So,
it's like having also a good audience too. It's yes, you say that we're doing a lot of the work, but you're setting up this whole environment for us to play. Mm. And we don't feel like if we do something wrong, it's going to be bad. We also feel like, oh, the possibilities are endless. Mm. And if we say something weird, you're going to be like, okay, well, yeah, we'll go with that.
I love a weird sentence. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That, the best stuff comes from like the off-the-top improv where it's totally. Like, that makes no sense, but it's the funniest thing in this context
just
to say.
Full
and
absurd.
Now we're
going to
roll with that. Yeah.
I my dream for the next or one of the next dreads is to do a Chosen multiverse where it's the Chosens.
Oh, that would be so fun.
Oh, yes, please.
I have different thoughts on it, but I'm like, it could be anything. It could just be anything.
Yeah, whatever. It could be hunting crocodiles in the sewer, man.
Exactly.
It could be whatever you want.
Sick. Pretty sick.
Speaking of sewer, can we do an It one? Is that crazy?
Yeah. Whatever you want. You can do whatever you want.
I don't think there's any rules.
I like the horror aspects of it.
But there's something, I've also, and I know that Alex and Spencer joke about this a lot. There's something so funny about, with Dread specifically, is that when the tower falls, you die.
Yeah.
That's the premise of it, which is why it's really funny to just be like, okay, in this game, you guys are just going to the mall.
Yes.
And it's just like, oh, but if the tower falls, you die.
You do die.
And it's just, this is what I thought. I thought this the other day for Chosens. If it's a Chosen multiverse episode, right? And the setup of it, the setup of it at the beginning is they were supposed to go somewhere or something, and then a crazy explosion or something happens. They're like, oh my God, we were supposed to die. Which means we've been final destinationed. So nothing is actually coming for them or anything. Just they're going about their days normally, but they know that they might die. So it's literally a Final Destination campaign.
The water on the bathroom floor of I forget which Final Destination gave me nightmares.
I remember.
Yeah. Puddles on my bathroom floor.
Dude, those movies are so stupid, but they are so good.
So good. And I haven't rewatched them.
And
in
I love that the premise of it is just like, you're gonna die, dude.
At any moment.
Yeah, but
and
it's
you're
Devin
gonna die
Sawyer.
Silly death.
You're gonna almost die 9 times, and then the thing that you thought was definitely originally gonna kill them definitely kills them.
Oh my God. Yeah.
It's like a pigeon. Not the pigeon.
The setup of those movies is so stupid because you're just like, okay, so nobody got an aneurysm? Like, the fan nearby caught a wire and it's spinning and all this. It's
and that got
like,
wrapped around somebody's neck.
It's literally always a Rube Goldberg machine.
It is a Rube Goldberg death machine.
And then occasionally just a person gets hit by a bus.
Yeah.
Like
occasionally.
You're being crazy.
That happens in, I think, two. Guys, this is ridiculous.
It's a full bus hit.
You think that's going to happen in every movie when someone's in the street going like, see you later. You're like, here comes a bus. Here comes a bus.
In my head, that was the Spencer was pulling for saying misogynistic stuff and zombies.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I was waiting for, was him to miss it and it to be like your period.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some crazy thing to hit him. I was praying he was going to knock the tower over on that, but it was still very fun.
Oh,
the whole
God.
And I wouldn't change it.
You didn't plan that ending really at all.
For zombies?
Yeah.
I had like 5 or 6 different ways it could go at the end that I kept super loose on purpose. I think Fruit Factory was definitely one of them, but what the Fruit Factory became was nothing compared to after you guys started like putting details in about it and like about your dad. And like we figured out, I feel like that relationship between you and your dad, we figured out really fast on the phone.
Yep.
And all of a sudden I was like, I know that this is going to be overtly evil facility that she's kind of been clueless about her whole life.
Once you have a Tiffany's necklace with his full name in cursive, you know.
Yeah.
Evil.
Robert.
Evil.
Yep. Oh, man. Yeah. Well, I'm very excited for these episodes of Smosh versus Aliens.
Oh, me too.
Me too.
And so much more. I mean, I think we will come back around to D&D. You know, we're figuring out what we want to do here at Smosh. The sky's the limit. But we have so much fun doing stuff like this. And
you guys are great at it.
Love having you around. So any excuse to bring you back.
And you gave us gifts.
You gave us gifts?
Like, this is our first gift that someone gave us at Smosh Mouth, I think.
Is it?
As History. A guest.
Put a plaque right
Literally.
There.
George, your name's going to be here.
I
what did
it.
You get, honey?
I got a 12 on that one.
We're above average.
Pretty good.
I got a 30.
Hang in there.
Oh, you're rolling rough there.
Sick.
So our luck has changed.
Okay. I'm not going to be mad if you guys trade. Do whatever you want.
No, oh, no.
I can't match them.
Nope, he's not taking my dice.
George, thank you so much.
Thank you guys for having me. It's a blast.
And thank you for watching. Check out George in all those places.
Yeah.
Hero Club. Everything that you do. I mean, yep. So much wonderful stuff. I feel like you're everywhere. And definitely go watch Smosh vs. Aliens.
Please.
On Smosh Games.
Yep.
Check it out. And watch Smosh vs. Zombies.
It's Binge so
that as well. Three
good.
Episodes of that. Two episodes of Smosh vs. Aliens.
Yep.
Easy.
A day of fun.
A day of fun.
A day of fun.
All right. We'll see you later. Bye.
Bye.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.